You know, this is the biggest club competition, you know, in rugby.
We just love taking part and, you know, creating memories.
We want to see where we stand amongst the best in Europe.
There's no doubt that it's that sort of bridge between the domestic stuff and international.
Europe is hugely important to Munster, obviously the history we have with it. Guys love playing at the highest level of rugby and, you know, everyone loves playing in it.
You hop out of one car and get into another, and it's a bigger, faster model, and you haven't got a long season. You've got those games. You've got to peak for those games, you've got to be right for 80 minutes, because if you don't, you know, you're out.
It's only getting bigger and bigger and more exciting, and everyone's getting excited.
You look forward to, especially this time of the year, you know, the launch of it sort of really signals the start of the tough bit of the season.
So we would really love to, you know, to get that trophy back in France.
The intensity, you know, the teams you come up against, that's why you play the game, isn't it?
Saracens started their quest for a third consecutive European Rugby Champions Cup title with 8 tries in a comprehensive victory at Northampton.
What a performance from the champions. Serving notice here at the Gardens. Who can stop them? It really is going to take something very, very special to derail this lot.
Newcomers La Rochelle impressed as they beat Harlequins. Castres drew with Munster, while fellow French sides Toulon and Clermont both recorded narrow wins over Welsh opposition. Elsewhere, there were opening victories for Ulster, Leinster, Racing 92, Bath and Premiership champions Exeter. You'll hear from the likes of Ryan Lamb, Les Kiss and Di Young as we review round one and look ahead to 10 great matches in the round two weekend, which begins on Friday the 20th of October. There's a view on Saracens from their former flanker Will Fraser. We've a Q&A with Leicester's Matt Tamua, and we're also joined by the man who captained his side to one of the biggest shocks in the history of club rugby in round one of the Challenge Cup. That's all to come on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Hello and welcome to show 2 of the new season. It's James Burrows with championscuprugby.com's Emma Thurston and Tom May, who played for 3 clubs who are part of the European rugby season: Toulon, Northampton and Newcastle. And guys, what an opening weekend. Tom, no prizes really for guessing the game of the weekend, or is it not as clear-cut as that?
I think for many there'll be different games, but certainly my game of the weekend was in Southwest London, where La Rochelle turned over Harlequins. I think it was a fantastic performance by them in their debut in this competition, and really probably turned some heads, I think.
Emma, you were at Franklin's Gardens for an astonishing performance by the defending champions, which they thrashed Northampton on the opening day of the Premiership season, not many saw it coming a second time.
Definitely not. You didn't expect them to do it twice in a row, and they really have Northampton's card marked. And I think every side, as much as heads turned with La Rochelle's attacking performance in their debut, I'm sure every club's head would have turned at Saracens. You know, they've started the defence of their title in imperious form.
I mean, social media was going bananas, wasn't it? Certainly Saturday, but that Sunday match, you must have been flooded with the amount of reaction.
Absolutely. There was plenty of reaction during the game from former players, from fans as well. And then we also put a question to everybody after the weekend's results, you know, which player impressed you the most in round one and why? And we're at Champions Cup on that. And there was a number of players from the Northampton and Saracens game, more from Saracens, it must be said. But Chris Ballard on Twitter, he's at ChrisBallard94, he said Farrell and Williams from Sarries were phenomenal, but Courtney Laws was an immovable object against 15 unstoppable forces. And I don't think any of us can disagree that Courtney Laws was heroic in defeat there.
Absolutely. We're going to be reading plenty of your responses during the show. But next, we're going to look back on some of the outstanding opening matches as we review round one.
I'm Jason Eden, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
So let's start in Pool 2, where Saracens started their title defence in style, didn't they? A brilliant 57-13 win over Northampton Saints at Franklin's Gardens. Tom May, I mean, it was an astonishing performance.
there's just no stopping Saracens at the moment, and Northampton must be wondering, why on earth do we still have to play them two more times this season?
No, it's frightening for them, isn't it? And certainly they would be delighted to see the back of Saracens after another horrendous weekend for them. I think they would be fairly disappointed in the way they defended and some of those tries were scored. But having said that, you have to take your hats off sometimes when you're playing against a side that is bang in form. They're so ruthless. Their attention to detail is huge in that they don't mind doing the dirty work and getting the really horrible stuff right time and time and time again. And that's what makes them so difficult to beat. If you look at Brad Barrett and Marcelo Bosch in the centre, you know, as an ex-centre, that's where my eyes are drawn all the time. They do the hard work time and time and time again. They're not flash centres. You know, they're not sort of out the back door offloads all the time. They're just doing the hard yards, but it creates such a huge amount of difference for their team. That said, there was only two players on that Saracens side that made more than 10 tackles, and that tells a story in itself.
Liam Williams obviously scored two of Saracens' four first-half tries. They were 23 points up at one point. They had the bonus point in the bag by half-time. Four more tries in the second half. It's the psychological damage if you're in Northampton's camp, Tom, which if you're a fan, you must surely be worried about, because Saints travel to Clermont this weekend. You've been in teams who have been on the wrong side of some results. How on earth do you psychologically recover from that?
You just got to wipe the slate clean. Forget
How can
it.
You? It's happened to you
it's
twice.
It's difficult, yeah, but it'd be a different team.
Yeah, exactly. You have to say it's a different side. It's a new week. You know, Jim Mallander said it's an exciting challenge. They have to approach it that way. Northampton, I think Saracens are potentially their bogey team. I think I said this last week. They've got their number. They know how to beat them and beat them well. So they've got to think that perhaps Clermont aren't that side. Having said that, the last time they went to the Marcel Michelin, I don't think it went very well for them.
I think a lot of people will be thinking they're going to get a tonking. Clearly they did it at the weekend. And there is a danger, I think, if they do go down to Clermont and they come away with a result like they did last weekend, there is a very, very big danger of them unravelling all of that good work that they did since round one.
Well, is their European campaign over after one round?
No.
No. Possibly after two. There's clearly some issues within their defensive systems that Saracens have highlighted, but I would also say that their midfield was not one of the strongest areas of their defence at the weekend, and that combination of Myler, Burrell and Piers Francis, that was pretty much the first time they've ever played together. Key combinations in those midfield areas that have to be right, and it's difficult to get it right in a Champions Cup game.
And of course they were playing the two times European champion Saracens, who just look a class apart at the moment. Let's speak to a player who's been there, done it, worn the t-shirt, Will Fraser, of course, of Sarries. And Will, great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you, and I
were at La Rochelle doing the game on the weekend, but you obviously at Franklin's Gardens on Sunday too. What do you think from a Saracens perspective? Give us the in-house assessment. What was the most impressive part for you?
I think it was just the fact that we were so relentless. You look back at that first game of the season and we let them back in a little bit in the second half. I think from start to finish, it was just the energy, the intensity. I mean, if you look at that shot Baz and Jacko put on Courtney Laws in the last sort of 5 minutes of the game, it kind of epitomises the relentlessness of the match.
We spoke about this briefly last week in the podcast, but I'd love to get your opinion on it. If we are previewing Saracens and we're trying to look at where their weaknesses would be, I know you're not going to give too many answers on this, but what areas of weakness are there in the Saracens side? Because I've spoken to several people about it and it's really difficult to try and find a way to unpick that team.
Weakness, I've said, is a difficult word. I think teams that do well against us tend to play in behind us quite a bit. So because obviously we've got this big line speed, where we struggle against some teams is where they've almost played a similar game to us in terms of looking to be a bit more pragmatic at times, so putting the ball in behind, putting us back into the corners and not allowing our defence to give us the energy because they're not giving us anything to hit. Well, teams that we do really well against are actually teams that love to run it, because the more they run against our defence, if the defence is good on the day, it just feeds the boys and feeds that energy and feeds that relentlessness.
In terms of that performance, obviously, as you said, very, very clinical. Is that now the benchmark that we're going to expect? Are we going to see these guys put in something even greater against Ospreys back at home, do you think?
Well, I'd hope even greater, but I struggle to see how you can get much better. It was so impressive on the weekend. But yeah, I think that the lads always are trying to set themselves new standards. And I think on the weekend, we definitely did that. So they'll definitely be saying that's our, you're right, that is our benchmark now, and everything needs to be either there or above. So we'll see what happens come this weekend, but hopefully we can get there or thereabouts.
And Will, just give us an understanding, a flavour of what life is like behind the scenes at Sarries, because how does Mark McCall, the players and the coaches, how do they guard against complacency? Because there have been teams in the past who have won big titles, and then for one reason or another, they've taken their foot off the gas. Maybe they got complacent, maybe they haven't signed the right players. But that's not the case at Saracens.
So how has
Mark McCall engineered that?
I think if you look at our values, humility is you know, one of our four core values. Obviously, that's always being driven massively at the club. And then we're a massive process-driven team, so we never really talk about winning. We never go into a season and pick out and say we want to be in this final, we want to get bonus points against these teams. It's always about that weekly process and those little things that actually lead to the big results, lead to the championships, lead to winning matches. But if you look at the actual group of players, it's a relatively sort of young group of players, and of which most have come through the academy system. So there's this constant drive and driving always become better and better and better and still the potential. And I think we're at a stage at the moment with the club where, you know, you look at that era of Wasps and Leicester where they have real dominance. We've got the potential to do something similar, if not better. And I think the will of the boys to try and fulfill that potential is quite exciting. So complacency, I don't think we'll ever come into it, and hope we keep getting better and better year on year.
Will, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy this weekend. It is frightening, isn't it, Tom? Just a final thought before we move on, that they are so young. I mean, Saracens could keep on winning if they want to. The ball is very much in their court. And I know, Emma, the fans have been interacting with you on this as well. Tom, firstly, a thought from you.
Well, I think, you know, when you can bring international class players in like Liam Williams, and then you've got Nick Ezekwe, that's 19 starting. It's crazy.
He's in my fantasy team, by the way, Nick Ezekwe.
We'll talk about that later. He's a player that had a lot of reaction on social media. Lots of people were discussing him and perhaps hadn't spoken about him so much. Kevin Barwise on Facebook, he says, Nick Ezekwe caught my eye because he looked very comfortable amongst some very illustrious company. What a prospect. And Kate on Twitter also said, Farrell, Williams and young Nick Ezekwe from my club, Saracens, all were outstanding yesterday and contributed hugely to the win. So heads were turned on social media when it came to Saracens, as you'd expect.
The other match in Pool 2, of course, ASM Clermont-Auvergne. Well, their power really made the difference. They beat the Ospreys 26-21 in Wales. That was a match, though, that I'm not sure many expected in the way it panned out, because I think everyone thought Ospreys were there for the taking. And actually, they really showed some intensity during the full 80. I know that Clermont started quickly, but you know, Reese Webb scoring kept them in touch, and they refused to buckle Ospreys. And maybe that is just a little sign they want to make sure people just don't take them so easily.
Yeah, I think, you know, they've got a European history that they want to try and recreate. You know, they want to get back into the competition and be one of the strongest sides to take on, you know, the likes of Clermont. I think Clermont probably took their foot off the gas. There were some important performances, I thought, from an Ospreys point of view, from Dan Evans. I thought the two tries that he scored were outstanding. Tipperick as well. Some of his line breaks were fantastic. But when you give Clermont a bit of a start and you have someone like Raka that's running in a 60-metre try...
Well, that was a stunner, wasn't it?
Ridiculous. I mean, the guy is a sensation to watch, and he is in my fantasy.
I think he'll be in many people's fantasy teams. Just because you got points from his try, didn't you?
There's an overall point here, and we'll talk about it, all the other teams. Ospreys enjoyed 70% possession, though, in that match, and they didn't convert their opportunities. And you could say that about a host of other teams this weekend who had opportunity but didn't put them away.
Yeah, and I think it points to a ruthlessness and a real accuracy in taking your opportunities when you get them. That's the key to this competition. There aren't that many opportunities. So if you want to win or you want to get on top, you have to take them when they're presented to you.
And that's why Saracens were so impressive, because when they got their opportunities, they took them.
Pool 2 standings then. Saracens top with 5 points. Clermont-Auvergne just behind them with 4. Ospreys have won. Northampton Saints with nothing. So is it easy to guess who's going to be going through from this pool? I mean, we discussed this at length last weekend. Is it just the one team? We talked about the shock of it actually only being one team going through to the quarterfinals.
Well, Saracens probably will go through, I think.
Maybe.
But then I think if Saints lose this weekend, they may well then take that opportunity to rest players in further rounds, which might mean that other sides could get bonus points, which eventually might also mean we see Saracens and Clermont getting out.
And I think that's the way with every pool, is that you're going to have your runners and riders after round one and two, those that are in position to then really attack the back-to-back rounds. And it's all about the sides which are at the bottom of the tables and what they do, how they upset the apple cart when it comes to the latter rounds. So it may be clear-cut. I think Saracens may top this pool, but then there's all other elements that come into the mix later on.
So Saturday, the 21st of October, ASM Clermont Auvergne against Northampton Saints. That's a 4:15 kick-off local time at the Stade Marcel Michelin on BN Sports and BT Sport. Tom, a thought from you. Everyone sees Clermont winning that. If you're a Northampton Saints fan travelling to actually one of the best stadiums in the whole competition, what gives you hope?
I think the fact that it's a new week. You know, I think as a Northampton Saints fan, you would have just wanted to wake up on Monday morning and think, right, you know, get me on that plane trip to Clermont. It's a fantastic place to go and play. No one expects them to win. That will give them a bit of freedom, I think, to try and play a bit more expansively, because you can't just sit and grind out a win against Clermont. You've got to try and attack them.
Saturday the 21st of October, Saracens against Ospreys. That's a 7:45 kickoff local time at Allianz Park on BT Sport and BN Sports. And again, Emma, everyone expects Saracens not only just to win, but to win with the full 5 points.
Yeah, and so do I, to be honest. How can you not after that round one performance? Ospreys will want to disrupt things, but as Tom said, how do you disrupt Saracens? That is the big question in European rugby at the minute.
To pull one next, where La Rochelle certainly set the standard, winning their first game in the European Champions Cup, beating Harlequins 34 points to 27 at the Twickenham Stoop. 4 tries in this one, so they got the bonus point. Emma, what a fantastic start by La Rochelle, because we know how successful they've been in the top 14, but no one really knew what they were going to bring to Europe.
No, and I think we spoke about this last week. We said, what about the occasion for La Rochelle? Tom has highlighted them as, I think, one of the ones to win, his dark horse of the competition. And they're not his dark horse anymore, because everybody now knows about La Rochelle. And they handled the occasion very, very well. They were assured. They put their game on the park and they showed what they're about. They've got a big, beefy pack that love to really get stuck in. And then they've got packs that can, you know, have got stardust and can do things. And I thought Lamb orchestrated it brilliantly at fly half. So it was a brilliant performance. And I'm looking forward to seeing them in round two back at home.
It's going to be a fascinating game, the one against Ulster. But Tom, just a few thoughts reflecting on that opening statement, because a lot of people were putting, you know, Marcus Smith against Ryan Lamb. It was the novice, it was the young pup against a very much more wily, experienced player, and it was definitely the experience that told.
Yeah, I think for Lamy, the way that La Rochelle play the game fits perfectly with the way he wants to try and play. Patrice Galazzo knows him as a player, and I think he's found a team that are quite happy to run from 5 metres out from their own try line, whereas probably prior to that, the last few clubs he's been at, people would have been pulling their hair out.
It was a great story. He told me earlier in the week that he had got to La Rochelle and he went to a cafe and was having a burger in a cafe, and then suddenly
Ryan Lamb having a burger.
And started, well, he was feeling guilty, and then suddenly he saw his boss go past on a jet ski, and then he suddenly thought, actually, if he's on a jet ski and I'm having a burger, I don't really care. Was on great form, Ryan Lamb. Obviously, he played that dummy he sold, the show and go, which fooled Marcus Smith and Danny Kerr, was absolutely top notch for that try for Dumour in the second half. I spoke to Ryan after the match in a very busy players' tunnel.
I think first half we really wanted to keep doing what got us here in the first place. Very grateful that we gave ourselves justice on the field and also defended quite well. And then second half we made it a bit hard for ourselves. But as you can see, the spirit in this team is massive, and it's a pleasure to play with. It's something that the ethos of the club's built on, is fast running rugby. You are a big star. It's something we really stick to, and it doesn't matter what competition we're in, we're not going to change our game plan for anyone. And that's what's got them to the top of the top 14 last year. And to come into this competition, we wanted to do exactly the same. And we know Quins are a very good side. They come up hard. So we were quite direct in the first half. And then after that, as soon as we got on the front foot, ball of our very good big ball carrying forwards, it's like playing an armchair.
Do you think, despite playing the game for so long, you're actually happier now than you've ever been?
Yeah, massively. I think, to be honest, the last few years it's been hard. It's been a bit of a drag. And I wanted to be a bit more freer, and I wasn't going to stay in England if an opportunity didn't come away abroad. I don't think I was going to play much more. And luckily for me, La Rochelle saw my qualities and they gave me a chance. And it's something I've really relished. I'm very grateful to Patrice, and I love the ethos of the place. It's the French lifestyle. It's a beautiful city. And yeah, it's really kind of refreshed me. And I feel like I'm 20 years old again.
One of the defining moments of today was that outrageous dummy you sold in that second half. Marcus Smith would have done a lot of learning today. And you kind of showed him, I suppose, without floating your ego too much, just what I suppose your experience, how much that really does count at this stage.
Well, I think you can see him as a player, he was class as well. I mean, he's got some great touches and you can see his footwork on the ball. He takes the ball very flat and it's very brave for a young lad to do so. I mean, he's played in the biggest competition in Europe and he's 18 years old and he's got a big future ahead of him, so it's just nice that you go out there and you play. And I think Marcus is a lot more solid round player than I was at 18, so I'm not going to give him too much stick.
And La Rochelle as a team, that was quite a statement. What is the potential of this team?
I mean, as you see, it's massive potential. We've got some big ball carrying forwards that want to get their hands on the ball and it gives you a lot of options everywhere, so it's something that we wanted to play like. And I mean, once you get a few yards over the gain line, it makes it so much easier. And I think with the new ruck rules that you can't come around the side and kind of ruin the ruck area a little bit, it's a lot cleaner. It works for our advantage and we've got some very good backs. I think Jeffrey Dumaru in the, at 12, he speaks a bit of English, which is always a help as well, but he's a class player. And
I was going to say, how do you get through a game? Is it a mixture of all different languages? Because you've got some Fijians, you've got English, Samoans, you've got Samoans.
It is.
You've got a few French.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I think a lot of us, we try and talk as much French as we can on the field, and the communication is somehow works. So I think we're better at reacting off what each other do, let alone kind of talking about it. So it's, I think it works in our advantage.
Have you ever wrestled Inigo Antonio?
Absolutely not. Have you seen the size of the guy? He's unbelievable.
But he's one of a number, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got three or four of those type of lads. I mean, there's one walking past now.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, so it's...
You look terrified when he walked past you just now.
They are big guys, so I've got to keep my wits about me. But the skill level here as well, I mean, you can say they can ball carry, but you can see the offloading ability and the way we want to kind of flood gaps. And it's the ethos that we train it all week in. I think Patrice and... Gabba's been very instrumental in that, so it's a pleasure to play in. But as we say, it's early doors. We wanted to make sure that we come and give ourselves justice of what we can play like, and I think we did that. But there's some big tests to come, and we know that in European competition, it's very tough.
Ryan Lamb in great form after the victory against Harlequins. Tom May, you're the best person to speak to, really. Players who have left England and gone to play in France. What did you get from your experience in Toulon?
A huge amount. Not only do you get something from playing rugby in a different environment, but you learn more about a culture, what it's like to live and play in a different country. I think what's really difficult for Lamy, which is really quite impressive, is I went over as a centre wing and I ended up playing a couple of games at fly half, as I do, just floating around
just
the back.
You're flexible and versatile, aren't you, Tom?
That was one of the toughest things I've ever been asked to do. At Toulon, we all had French lessons. We were expected to speak French. But I was trying to manage a game at 10, which I was happy to do it, but I wasn't most comfortable doing it. I was looking at where the ball was coming from. I was speaking to someone who didn't speak French. He was an Australian. So I was receiving the ball. I was trying to look where the space was. I was looking at the players around me. And then you have to work out whether they're speaking Georgian. And, you know, there's a barrier there. You're speaking to a Kiwi who hasn't been brought up on learning French at school. You're speaking to a French bloke. Or you're speaking to Chris Chesney, who hasn't got a clue what's going on. There's so many things that are going on that I found really tough in that fulcrum position. That for Ryan Lamb to put in a performance like that so early on in his La Rochelle career in the Champions Cup away at Quinns, that was really impressive for me. And I think from a team perspective, they only had 36% possession, which highlights taking those opportunities when they get them. You know, compare the amount of carries. They had 87 carries to 172 that Quinns had. You know, they're doing something right and they're doing it well.
Let's quickly move on to the team they're going to be playing against this weekend and reflect on their first round match against Wasps. That's Ulster, of course, 19 points to 9 winners on Friday night. Jacob Stocktail to the fore. He is a unit, isn't he? And I know we talked about him last week in that relationship with Charles Piatow. Christian Liliafano, he took over the goal kicking. He kept them ahead. But how do you assess Ulster after one round, Tom?
Pretty good. Charles Piatow, he's almost unplayable at times. You can see why he's headed with a big money transfer. I mean, Wasps must have been like, oh, why couldn't we just keep this guy?
Yeah.
Because he turned Christian Wade inside out. And admittedly, I think Christian Wade defended that one try fairly poorly. But he just seems to have an ability to create something out of nothing. And on wet, sloppy nights in Belfast, that's exactly what you need to unpick a top side in Wasps.
We can hear from both directors of rugby now speaking in their post-match press conferences, Di Young of Wasps and First Ulster's Les Kiss.
We didn't play exceptionally well, but we showed a lot of character and toughness and were able to move the momentum of the game through some smarter, stronger decisions in the second half. So we just had to keep putting pressure on, keep the game simple, keep it direct. It's a massive victory. It's a good victory. It's Europe. It's tough. Those games don't always flow. And in the end, we just had to do the right things at the right end of the park. And the boys had to make the decisions they had to on the pitch to make that pressure count. And the only way it counts is on the scoreboard, because it was also important to probably keep that 1 point away from them as well, because it will be a very, very tight draw.
I was really pleased with the effort of the boys. I thought they gave everything. Joel and the boys are kicking themselves a little bit because we made little errors which didn't help us really. But as I said, we struggled to really get enough possession and enough momentum to cause them problems. We felt if we could add the ball in the right area and keep a bit of pressure on them, we'd come away with something.
You have to feel for Di Young at the moment. That defeat was their fifth in a row. The injuries continue. Tom Cruise, the hooker, picked up an injury, I think, to his finger, so he's going to be out for a few more weeks. Emma, who would be Di Young right now?
Not me. Wasps have lost their confidence a bit. They've got so many players injured. You have to move Rob Miller to 10 early in the game and Gopeth out to 12. That puts them off their stride. And now they face a winner-takes-all game at home against a side that have beat them at home very recently. So the chips are down for Di Young at the minute, and they just need a break. They need something to go their way. He mentioned the bounce of the ball just not going their way. They need a confidence-boosting game, a win, and they need some players back.
Let's just run you through that Pool 1 standing so far, with La Rochelle top with 5 points, Ulster with 4, Wasps with 1, Harlequins at the bottom with no points yet after one round. And let's look ahead to the fixtures. And it's La Rochelle against Ulster Rugby, 4:15 local time kickoff on Sunday, the 22nd of October. That's on France Télévision, Sky Sports and beIN Sports. Here's how Ulster's Rory Best is viewing the La Rochelle Challenge this weekend.
Going to France at any stage in the tournament is always really, really tough. But when you're playing against a team that, okay, they didn't win the top 14 last year, but they finished the regular season top. And that, when you look at how tough that league is, it's no mean feat. And they are to be taken very, very seriously. And like I say, with the calibre of the pool that we're in, we'll go there and we'll have to play as good as we were against Wasps. It's going to take something, probably a step up again.
It's all about bonus points for Ulster this weekend, isn't it? That's what they have to target, try and come away with something.
Yeah, first game at home in the Champions Cup for La Rochelle, you'd think that that's going to be the key. I think Ulster probably fancy their chances of turning them over, but minimum is a bonus point.
The other game, of course, on Sunday, Wasps against Harlequins. That's a 5:30 local time kickoff on Sunday, the 22nd of October. That's at the Ricoh Arena on BT Sport and beIN Sports. So how do opening defeats of both Wasps and Harlequins affect their round two encounter? Here's the Quins director of rugby, John Kingston.
It probably puts the pressure on a bit more in terms of trying to progress out of the group, because you can't lose, you know, too many games before you're struggling to get out of the group. So, yeah, I've just said to the guys in there, as far as I'm concerned, we have to go up there and win to get ourselves back into the competition, or to throw ourselves back meaningfully in. One side's going to lose between Ulster and La Rochelle next week, and that will bring us that bit closer to one of those two teams if we can be successful. So we need to get a win next week. Very difficult place to win. Did it 4 weeks ago. I think that's positive. If you ask somebody to climb Mount Everest and they haven't climbed it before, they're probably a bit dubious. But we did that 4 weeks ago, so there's no reason why we can't go there with optimism to be able to do the job. But we know how good Wasps can be on their own patch.
Great line from John Kingston there. Quins had so many chances on Saturday. That is what will be frustrating them, because possession-wise, they had stack loads of it, and yet they couldn't put it away. Can you just give us an understanding of, when you're in that situation, why is it so difficult, in a sense, to do the easy part, to score the try? Because you had the possession, you created the chances, but you're not putting them away.
I think once you've missed one or two opportunities, it then starts to get frustrating, and then it becomes more and more easy to get a bit fed up with the game. You know, things aren't going our way here. We're really struggling. Okay, look, they only just lost to La Rochelle, but more alarming for me was the state of their defence at times. There's a couple of line breaks that Dumeiru made. Now, granted, he's a great player, but there were three Quins players stood in behind each other, which is not exactly your regular formation in defence. You know, he basically just cut back inside and found a massive hole. Now, that's something that someone like Christian Wade we'll be looking at over this week in the build-up to that game, saying, well, if we can pull defenders out, then at times Quins are all over the shop. So that's something that Wasps will be trying to highlight as well.
So a quick prediction then?
I think Wasps might actually manage to get a win here.
Emma?
I can see Harlequins going up and preying on Wasps' fragile confidence, but at the same time I can see Wasps pulling something out at home. So I'm going to sit on the fence, James.
Well done. Thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
Next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, we're going to be talking about pools 3, 4 and 5 in the European Rugby Champions Cup.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston.
On to Pool 3 then, where Leinster Rugby had a nail-biting 24 points to 17 victory over Montpellier at the RDS Arena. The Irish side gained a bonus point through their four tries. They went down to 14 men for the last 5 minutes when Adam Byrne was yellow-carded. They held on. Tom, it was a bit of a nerve-jangling one, wasn't it? But they came through and they didn't have Johnny Sexton. So if you're a Leinster fan, there is a great deal of strength to be taken from that, even though it was close.
Yeah, and I actually quite like the way that Byrne worked with Carberry. I thought that the access they had him in between those two sort of ball-playing positions was fantastic. To beat Montpellier is a good effort for a side that's missing such a key influence in Sexton. I think Montpellier will be one of the stronger teams this season. Certainly in the case of Nemanja Ndolo, that's the case.
How badly did they miss Aaron Cruden, do you think, Montpellier?
Yeah, I mean, he's been in and out of the side this season during the top 14, so they're used to being without him. That said, when he's in, he does some amazing things. You know, his kicking, his crossfield kicking, his attacking kicking is on point all the time. Any side would miss Aaron Cruden. But I think Leinster will be really happy with that win at home to get out of the blocks, get out of the first round of the competition with a win. That's the main aim for all of these teams, and they did that well against Montpellier.
Ndolo's two tries were right out of the textbook from him. He is just a bit like Nakarara at Racing, just unbelievably difficult to stop. So how do you stop someone who is such a unit like that?
First up has got to be your individual tackling. There's no point in chucking three blokes towards him because that's exactly the aim. You know, first person, unfortunately, has got to do their job on him. That's a lot easier said than done.
Not going to be me. Never in my lifetime.
But then picking up those support runners is equally as important, because if you drag two or three players out, that creates more space. If you then ignore those runners and you have your one-on-one tackler, you have to go low. There's no point in going up top. Robbie Henshaw saw the example of going up top and then amazingly recovered to pull off a great tackle on him around his ankles. He is at times unplayable, and there's probably four or five of those blokes in this competition.
And there were plenty of people talking about it, weren't they, on social media, Emma?
Definitely, and that tackle that Tom just said was pulled out by Ken Ryan on Facebook. He said, Robbie Henshaw stood out for me. Amazing work rate and showed extraordinary skills in space playing 13. As for that tackle on Ndolo, then to spring up, clean the ball away from William Pienaar was top draw. You won't see much better than that.
And that was only his second game back for Henshaw, so he got a try, and he really is just proving unbelievably crucial, a real linchpin in that back line, both in defence and in attack for Leinster. So when Sexton's not there, Henshaw is the guy who kind of falls into that responsibility mode, isn't he?
Yeah, and that, you know, he's quite a young bloke, you know, to step up to that sort of leadership role in for a side like Leinster at that age is a fantastic position for them to be. They've obviously got a lot of experienced leaders elsewhere, but Henshaw, both in the Pro 14, Champions Cup and at international level, is becoming more and more of a leader within his own right.
To the other game in the weekend, Exeter 24, Glasgow Warriors 15 in Pool 3. A late Sam Simmons try decided this one, kind of brought to an end Glasgow Warriors' unbeaten start to the season. Glasgow were actually 10 points to nil up after 11 minutes, so I think most people watching this suddenly were beginning to wonder if Exeter were going to come unstuck here, but they came back well. Harry Williams and Johnny Hill led the Chiefs' revival with a converted try apiece. When you consider that many people see this group so unbelievably tough, Glasgow, what do you make of them on the road? Because they were unbeaten, and at some point that unbeaten run was going to win, but can you see them bouncing back?
I can, yeah, because they play a high-tempo game. You know, Finn Russell's always looking to try and exploit space, try and shift the ball into that space. And what I thought was quite interesting watching this game was the comparison in the two styles. Actually, Exeter, who are quite adept at running the ball with a lot of pace and a lot of width, were a lot more direct in the way that they scored their tries. Glasgow tried to increase the tempo of the game, increase the pace, but they just lacked the accuracy. And that was exactly what we saw last year in the quarterfinal when they played Saracens. That was what let them down then. So maybe there's just a little focus that they need to have at important times within these games to get them across the line and pick up these important away wins.
Now, Sam Simmons, he's not as big as everyone says he is. You know, he's not a towering kind of presence, but what he punches well above his weight, doesn't he, for someone. And everyone is now talking about him as a potential England back row forward for the autumn internationals. So, I mean, where has he come from and where has this level of performance come from?
I think it comes all the way back to the ethos that they have within Exeter. I think they're a fantastic club for bringing young talent through. They identify them early. And if you're in a good environment as a young player, you see exactly what's happening at Saracens. You know, Nick Ezekwe is in exactly the same boat. I think the problem for Sam Simmons is that there's a huge amount of competition in that area. There's a lot of people...
Well, he's taken Thomas Waldrum's place. Waldrum's injured, but I mean, it's astonishing that the player he's dislodged.
Yeah, exactly. And that, now that's a start. But, you know, you've got Underhill also, you know, playing well. And there's so many names in the, just to fill those three slots. I think it's going to be tough for him, but it's great to see him play so well.
And in terms of that international recognition, these two European matches are huge, because they are that step between domestic rugby and international rugby. You know, that's a fact. So for Eddie Jones to be looking at Sam Simmons and seeing if he performs on this stage, and he does, who knows?
Pool three standings then. Leinster top with 5 points. Exeter on four. Montpellier on one. Glasgow yet to score. And to the fixtures. Glasgow against Leinster. That's this Saturday, the 21st of October. 1 o'clock kickoff at Scotstoun on Sky Sports and BN Sports. And then Sunday, the 22nd for Montpellier against Exeter. That's a 2 o'clock kickoff local time at the Altrad Stadium. That's on BN Sports and Sky Sports. Starting with the Glasgow-Leinster one. I mean, these two know each other extremely well, Tom, but you just fancy that Glasgow on their home track, they'll be frustrated about the Exeter performance. They're just going to have a little bit too much in the locker, or how do you see this one going?
Well, I think from the opportunity that they had themselves in a good position. They'll be really annoyed by the fact that Exeter have got out of there with a home win. I think they'll go back up to Scotstoun and really think, right, we know this opposition, we've played them time and time again, we're more comfortable playing against them. They're not great against Premiership sides, let's face it. I think that Glasgow will come away with a home win there.
And what about Montpellier, Exeter, Emma? I mean, we really want to see Montpellier's true colours, I suppose, because if they are going to be this team that many are tipping for the title, you want to see a kind of a really impressive 80-minute performance from Montpellier, not kind of a 40, 50, 60 performance.
Yeah, absolutely. We need the full package. And at home, French sides are very proud. Montpellier are, I believe they've been going very strongly in the top 14 at home as well, putting lots of points on the board. And for the Chiefs, it's a case of replicating what they did in round one and taking it up a notch on the road. But Montpellier will look to really stamp their authority at home and make sure that they're really in the mix in this pool.
To pool four then, Racing 92 edging out Leicester Tigers 22 points to 18. Three rapid tries in the first half ultimately proved decisive. Leicester though had the ideal start with Luke Hamilton crossing after 3 minutes, but Nakaroa was absolutely immense. Larue and Thomas gave Racing a 9-point lead. Johnny May again just keeps on scoring tries for Leicester. So a crucial bonus point for them. We talked about Racing last week about not really knowing the way they wanted to play, but actually that was a pretty decent performance. And in Nakaroa, oh my goodness, they have the player certainly of one of the players of the round, surely.
Surely the only second row to have played sevens and torn the seven circuit to pieces as well.
He's got a gold medal, hasn't he?
I mean, the guy is absolutely unplayable at times. I was actually watching this game thinking, how can that ball look so small in his hands? And that's actually the key. His hands are so big that actually he allows himself space, that his free hand is just there to create himself space, hold off defenders, which makes his offloading game so dangerous.
He had 10 offloads in that match, which was more than Leicester's entire number put together.
It's frightening, isn't it? I've never seen him pass with two hands. You know, the old sort of what you'd be teaching your kids at mini rugby. I don't think he was taught that.
Well, it's instinctive. He's learnt it from birth, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But as a defensive unit, how do you stop? We talked about it with Ndolo. I mean, he's getting above you. He's a towering figure and he's just getting it. You can't defend it, can you?
No, and I think it's more key with Nakaroa, actually, than it is Ndolo, because Ndolo's more of a finisher. He's looking more for himself and he's a lot heavier, whereas somehow Nakarawa looks like he's trying to look after you when he's sort of in that contact area. He doesn't actually smash into anyone, or, you know, there's no sort of massive collisions. He just gets into the little holes and somehow manages to pull defenders in. But you can't then leave those attacking players free in and around him. You have to block their channels. You have to make sure that you know where they are or where they're coming from. Otherwise, they're straight through.
What can Leicester take from that?
A point, obviously. I think they can take the fact that they've got their feet back under the table in Europe. They didn't do particularly well against Racing the last time they were there. I think they can take a very strong fulcrum with Ford and Tamua, really flourishing still. And I think they just need a little bit more gnarl back at home. I know that when I spoke to Ronan O'Gara, he was saying about Leicester Tigers that it was like Munster, that they put the Leicester shirt on and certain standards are expected. And at Welford Road in particular, in front of a full house. So those standards will be expected, and I expect them to take it up a notch when they're back at home.
I know Matt O'Connor was particularly pleased, because if you look at the opening rounds they've had before Glasgow, Munster, Racing, they've always come unstuck and been beaten quite comprehensively. So a useful point there for the Tigers. The other match, of course, was the draw between Castres Olympique and Munster, 17 points apiece. This was a bit of an intriguing one, Tom, wasn't it? Because it deep into injury time, Castra had opportunities. There was a row over a potential infringement at the ruck. So who is that draw? Who comes out of that draw better, Munster or Cast?
Cast. You know, I think they're going to be really annoying for the other three teams to play. They know they're probably not going to get out of that group. And they're there as a real frustration, you know, with all due respect to them, because they've got some fantastic players in their own right in terms of Aberson. Erda Pieta's, I think, a fantastic player for them. But you're right, that moment at the end where Copeland had knocked the ball out of the scrum half's hand, I was just like, well, that has to be a penalty. Mm. And what a fantastic opportunity to kick a goal and win.
Well, they had the drop goal as well from Erda Pieta, so they had the chance.
They had the chance, but then, you know, I think Cass will be really pleased to draw against Munster. It's a real sort of boost for them. I think it'd be frustrating for Munster, having finished last season's Champions Cup well. Blaendahl, I think he's got something about him, and I think this weekend against Racing, they're going to have to be firing, because as well as Racing aren't probably firing all cylinders, they're doing enough, and they've got enough threats around the field to be a real problem for Munster.
There's so much pressure on Munster, and we've got to take, of course, the emotional element of this weekend, because it's going to be a year since the death of Anthony Foley. So Toman Park this weekend for the Racing match, again, is going to be this emotional cauldron, and it's how these players channel that.
It is, and we saw with the way that the entire Munster squad and all of the individuals handled the emotion around Anthony Foley's passing last season, that they are able to do that, and they're able to really use their rugby to channel their emotions and pay respects on the field to him. So I expect the players to handle that very well at the weekend and pay their respects on the field in that regard against Racing.
At the table, for what it's worth, after one round, Racing top with 4 points, Castra and Munster on 2 points each, Leicester at the bottom with one. To the fixtures, Munster Racing, which we just started discussing there, that's a 5:30 kickoff at Toman Park this Saturday, the 21st of October. That's on Sky Sports and BN Sports. Tom May, you've played in big moments at Toman. How, if you're Racing, silencing the crowd is just the first part, isn't it?
But it's a pretty important part, and it's pretty difficult to do. I think with the surrounding emotion, and we don't want to get tied up in that too much, because Munster are good enough in their own rights to be winning this game. But with the emotion that will be there this weekend, with the frustration of last weekend, I think Munster will turn over Racing. I think Racing will turn up, and they'll be a lot closer than potentially people will think. I think many people might think, well, you know, the Parisians will travel over there, and, you know, it might be a bit windy, a bit drafty, and they won't fancy it. But I think Munster will come away with a win.
So same day, Saturday the 21st of October, same time kickoff for Leicester against Castra, 5:30 kickoff at Welford Road. This match on Sky Sports and BN Sports. The Welford Road faithful, Tom May, will be expecting a resounding result here, a performance which is right up there with their European expectations, because Leicester have not delivered in Europe for a long time.
No, they haven't. And I think this weekend gives them a fantastic opportunity to do that. I think they'll fancy their chances against Cast, and rightly so. I'd like to see Leicester get back to that sort of gnarly forward pack that they used to have a few years ago. I think that gives them a fantastic platform. And when they've got the backs that they have on show, when they're getting the front football with George Ford in there, I think they're going to be a really tough side to break down. And they'll be scoring some fantastic tries if they get into that position. They just need to really try and dominate teams up front first.
And Johnny May is having a field day, isn't he, Emma? He just gets a lot more involved than he probably did at Gloucester.
He does. It's his work rate, which I've been really impressed with this season. And his hit rate, 7-7, I believe. I'm not doing him a disservice there for getting a try or two. Can easily see him scoring another 1, 2, 3 maybe at the weekend because of that work rate and that will to find the ball and to get himself in those finishing positions, because when he gets within sniffing distance of the try line, that's it. He's very, very clinical.
To pull 5, and Bath absorb plenty of Benetton pressure in their 23-0 win at the Rec. Tries, one of the tries of the weekend from Zach Mercer. Alib Brew was his best physically once again. Josh Lewis kept great composure on his Bath European debut, kicking 3 from 3 penalties, conversions too. Benetton actually had 3 tries disallowed. They survived a good shout for a penalty try against them. Bath had Nick Hutterack and Tom Dunn sin-binned. Somehow, though, they held out for a clean sheet. Tom, when you consider Bath have also got big injury problems at the moment, I think they were without 13 players. So again, you've got to take that into the equation here. To make sure that Benetton didn't come away with anything and they didn't concede actually is probably the most impressive thing that Todd Blackadder can take from that display.
Yeah, and I think also looking at that result, you think, right, well, if a team gets nilled, then they've had absolutely no possession at all. That was not the case. You have to give Benetton a huge amount of credit. They've won 3 out of 6 in the Pro 14. They came into this competition, and most people would have thought, all right, they're going to be the whipping boys in this group. And they may well struggle to win a game. But that said, they're going to test sides. It'll be frustrating for Bath, I think, that they're so inconsistent at the moment. It must be frustrating for Todd Blackadder to, you know, each week he doesn't quite know the level of performance that he's going to get. There's one guy, though, that, you know, stands out week in, week out, and Rocket Aguni was fantastic again. You know, his ability to offload, to get through spaces that, quite frankly, he shouldn't get through. And that Zach Mercer try was out of this world.
It was, but that tackle, which stopped the Benetton try, a lot of people criticised Rocket Aguni because he can't tackle. And that was a try saver.
Yes, totally. He hit that attacker pretty hard as well, didn't he?
Well, on another day, it might have been a yellow card, let's be honest. It managed to save at least 5 points.
Yeah, and when you've got a player like that's so influential on a team in attack, but then does something like that in defence, it's a massive boost for a side. You know, that's almost as important as scoring at the other end, really.
They were in great condition, though, Benetton, Emma, but they had 2/3 possession. So, yes, they had plenty of opportunity. They looked a really physical team. Their fitness certainly wasn't an issue. It didn't appear to be. But they've got to learn quickly about taking points when they're being offered.
They do. I mean, we're talking about Bath being frustrated here, frustrated that they didn't get a try-scoring bonus point and for a full complement of points. But think of the frustration for Benetton with that amount of possession, with some decisions that perhaps didn't go their way. They now go back home and face Toulon after a game where they feel they should have got a lot more out of it than nil on the scoreboard. So I think some heads will have been turned. You know, Benetton have earned some early respect in the competition from some people that wouldn't have necessarily thought about them in that regard. But frustration still.
No bonus point either for Bath. Of equal frustration, I think, for Todd Blackadder. Also in pool 5, though, Toulon edging it 21-20 at the Stade Félix Mayol after being 18-0 up against the Scarlets. Well, Tom, Scarlets just weren't at the races to start with, but then they came racing back. Who is the more frustrated after that performance? Because Toulon, your old team, great start, but you know, they didn't manage it well in that second half, did they?
No, and I've had a message from Tom Whitford over the weekend saying, how did we manage to get ourselves into that situation? If the Toulon team manager's sending that to me, you know, there's certain words that are going to be said during the training week. I think that would be pretty frustrating for Toulon to get themselves out to that lead. But I think almost in a weird way, that would be a boost for the Scarlets as well, saying, look, we can get ourselves into a real hole and actually dig ourselves out of it. For Toulon, I think they have to try and believe in the players that they have at their disposal. Okay, they're bringing Fekitoa in, who will probably be there for rounds 3 and 4. But when you see what the likes of Tuasova can do, poorly Halfpenny left like a speed bump on the floor, you know, get him the ball because he's exciting. You know, don't just use the forward sort of grind and grunt and then sparingly get the ball. You need to try and develop their attacking game. And I think they have done that. Some of the early games in the top 14, they certainly showed some expansive style of play that perhaps we haven't seen over the past few years with Toulon. But that said, they've won in the first round. They'll be pleased to get out of there. I think Benetton, though, will be looking at this fixture at the weekend thinking, yeah, we could really frustrate this French side here.
Plenty of points, a decent try from Lee Halfpenny against his old club. Pool 5 standings then, Bath top with 4 points, level just behind Toulon on points difference with 4 points, Scarlets with 1, Benetton yet to register. Scarlets Bath, Friday night, 20th of October, that's a 7:45 kickoff at Parky Scarlets on BT Sport and beIN Sports. That is absolutely crucial for both teams, isn't it? And Scarlets will be hurting, Bath will be frustrated, so it's a very difficult one to call.
Yeah, and I think actually the fact that Scarlets are hurting, we'll see them win at Parky Scarlets. I think probably at the moment they're in a better place than Bath. You're not quite sure what performance Todd Blackadder's side are going to come out with on Friday night, and you just think with the quality that the Scarlets have got, they'll be too much at home for Bath.
Benetton Toulon, 4:15 kickoff on Saturday the 21st of October on BT Sport and beIN Sports. Toulon have got to be careful with this one. And you're looking at me saying, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. If you're looking for a surprise result, I would be looking at this one.
Well, this has got banana skin written all over it. I remember going away with Toulon to Rovigo on a freezing European weekend, and we nearly came unstuck there. And this has got the same thing written all over it. If there was any of the games out of this weekend that I'd be interested in watching, this is definitely going to be the one. I think it's... Benetton will be licking their lips at the opportunity to really take on one of the European heavyweights and think, right, we can pull off a result just as big as Krasnodar against Stade Francais. You know, it'd be amazing.
Predictions, Emma, for this weekend, for these two?
Home win for Scarlets.
Go on, say Benetton.
Toulon away win. Tom?
Benetton at home.
Chicken. Don't forget, you'll be able to find Champions Cup highlights via championscuprugby.com and the EPCR's social media channels. Next, we're going to be talking about the European Rugby Challenge Cup, and we'll be joined by a giant killing captain.
I'm John Smith, and this is the European Rugby Show.
It's James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston with you for EPCR European Rugby Show. And we'll start by looking at the Challenge Cup pool stages with a very quick rundown of the round one results. In pool one, Yenizai, STM 17, Bordeaux Bergler 57, Newcastle Falcons 32, Dragons 27. In pool two, Cardiff Blues 29, Lyon 19, Sale 20, Toulouse 20. Pool three, Pau 27, Gloucester 21, Argen 45, Zebre Rugby 10. In pool four, Krasnodar 34, Stade Francais, Paris 29, more on that in a moment. London Irish 14, Edinburgh 37, Pool 5, Worcester 30, Brive 20, Oignacs 15, Connacht 43. No prizes for guessing, Tom, the result of the weekend.
No, over in Siberia, that's the result of the weekend. A massive statement by Krasnodar, but also just eye-covering moments from Stade Francais. You know, they are being absolutely torn to pieces in the media. It's a tough week in Paris.
Yeah, so Krasnodar pulling off one of the biggest shocks in the history of club rugby when they marked their debut in European competition with a stunning win over the Challenge Cup holders, no less, Stade Francais Paris in Siberia. Stade led 12-5 at one stage. Krasnodar rallied superbly to pull 24 points to 12 in front just before half-time. Russia flanker Viktor Grezev was the home hero with two tries. Delighted to say we can welcome back a friend of the pod, the Krasnodar captain, Vasi Artemiev. Vas, what a weekend. What a moment for Russian rugby. You must be over the moon.
I know, it's great. To be honest, I was exhausted after the game. It was one of those when you you spend your entire energy and your emotions and you kind of feel emptied out at the end of the final whistle. But yeah, overall now looking back, it's a great performance. We did exactly what we wanted to do. We desired to win. We desired to control the game, control the pace. And for the vast majority of the game, we managed that for sure.
What do you think ultimately made the difference?
As I said, I think our desire, obviously, we knew who we're coming up against, reigning champions on our home soil. It's tough for teams to mull the way over here to Siberia and to, without knowing the opponent very well, maybe the expectations weren't as high of the level of the opponent too. But we knew that if one thing that we're going to be better than our opponents on the day is the desire to perform and to win in front of our home crowd.
And Stade, I think, had left Paris on the Tuesday to come. It's a long preparation for teams like this, and I know for Edinburgh, who you've got this weekend. Can you tell, almost in the eyes of your opponents, that you had them? Because they didn't know what to expect. They'd never played there before. You know exactly the way you want to play, and you know the atmosphere and the conditions. Could you tell that Stade were there for the taking?
Well, we didn't speak about that we must win, because we knew the caliber of the opponent that we were hosting. We knew they were the reigning champions. You can never really tell for sure before you start playing how your opponent is feeling, you know, morally and how well they've prepared. Regardless of the level of the preparation, I think Stade Français have such depth within their squad and such reserves that they felt they were going to win anyway, even if they didn't bring their top game, their A games. But we were delighted that, you know, it turned out how it turned out, that we actually managed to take control of most of the game ourselves.
Vaz, Tom here. Hope you're well. Fantastic result of the weekend. Has that changed the expectation at all of the club? Has it sort of almost pricked the club's ears up to think, well, actually, you know, we might be able to turn a few of these clubs over?
Hi, Tom. To be honest, I think the fact of this performance happened, I think all our opponents in the nearest future are going to have to bring their A game and going to really put in the work if they want to earn points against us. And, you know, we'll do our best to compete and to stay within the reach, because we are playing against some top European clubs. It's an exciting period in the club's history, and it's great to be part of it.
Vaz, can you give us an idea of what it was like in the changing rooms afterwards, the reaction from the crowd? I mean, were you allowed to celebrate and have a party afterwards, or was the message very much, OK, we've won, we're moving swiftly on?
Russian people love to party. So, I spoke to a few boys afterwards, and we really felt drained out of emotions and energy, and it took a little bit of time for this fact to sink in, you know, when we were just sitting talking about what we've achieved. Obviously, we don't want to be just a one historic event. We want our club to be consistent in their performances against some top teams. So this is the next step for us to build this consistency.
Well, obviously, wonderful result for you, wonderful performance, and huge importance to Russian rugby. Thanks very much for coming on the pod, and good luck this weekend against Edinburgh.
Thank you very much, guys.
So the match this weekend for Krasnyar is against Edinburgh in Moscow. So, Tom May, if you're Richard Cockerill going there this weekend, how do you prepare for this?
As you'd be preparing if you were playing Glasgow. I think they have to take this side seriously, and certainly for them, for the highlight of that last weekend's result, that will be a real sort of flag waving at them that, you know, you have to get your mindset right, have to deal with the implications of travelling away to Krasnyar. Richard Cockerill's not one of those coaches to let this slip. I think Edinburgh will have enough.
Can you imagine? I mean, he's pretty nervous spectator at the best of times.
But can you imagine being in the change room afterwards, should it go wrong?
I would not want to be there.
Just run home.
I wouldn't go back in the changing room.
Don't go on the flight. Hitchhike all the way back to Edinburgh. Can you pick some other fixtures for us to look forward to in the Challenge Cup this weekend, Emma?
I mean, to be honest, that's the game that most people are going to have their eyes on. Lyon hosting Sale Sharks, and Toulouse are at home as well in Pool 2. Interested to see what sides both teams put out are going to be two that I'll keep my eye on as well. And I know Tom's got his eye on another one.
Yeah, I think let's see how Stade bounce back against London Irish. I think they've got a lot to obviously deliver this weekend. But for me, as an ex-Falcon, I'll be really interested to see how they go away at Bordeaux. I think their result against Newport was great to have Toby Flood and Maxime Mermot back in the centres together. I think that's a huge confidence boost for a club that's already doing well, but a real test for them now to go down to the top 14 side.
Well, next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, throughout the season, we're getting to know some of the Champions Cup players a little better. And this week's Q&A is with the Leicester Tigers centre, Matt Tamua.
Describe yourself in a few words.
Awesome, funny, and awesome.
Which non-rugby sports star would you want on your team?
Roger Federer. He's just all class and he always wins. He's someone I've liked for ages, so yeah, I'll take him. Where would I play him in? The Brains Trust, I reckon. Maybe fly half, get rid of George Ford.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
When I left school and went to the Brumbies, I was told to keep your head down, bum up and mouth shut and just get on with it. And I think as a young boy, that was probably not too bad for the first couple of years. Just kind of worry about what's important and get on with it.
What can't you live without?
Coffee. Actually, I'm really addicted to it.
What would your job be if you weren't a rugby player?
Running a cafe, maybe, I think.
Which luxury item would you want if you were stranded on a desert island?
A sauna. Yeah, I just like saunas a lot.
Which teammate would you want with you if you were stranded on a desert island?
Longavili, Mulipola. Because if it got down to it, you could probably live off him for a while. He's quite large, so if I could restrain him and then eat him, I'd probably be around for a bit longer, I reckon.
Who inspired you growing up as a rugby player?
Johnny Wilkinson was actually right up there for me. When I was a bit younger, I read all his books and obviously what he did in Australia. Hurt as an Australian, but I think you can't help but admire a guy like that.
Matt Tamua, he is pretty dangerous at the moment and he is forging a really useful relationship with George Ford.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player for them. I think they've missed him while he's been away. His ball-playing ability, his ability to see space with the attacking threats that Leicester have now at their disposal, he's a useful tool for Matt O'Connor to have in his back line.
Well, next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, it's this.
I'm Peter Romani and I'll be playing fantasy rugby on championscuprugby.com.
So time to check on our fantasy rugby teams. Last weekend we heard from Tom and his fantasy team. He didn't really seem to give two hoots about the budget. This week I've chosen mine, and Tom, I'll tell you who I've gone for. It is tricky to get it all within the 100 million euro. Marla, Jamie George and Ellis Genge up front. Nakarawa and Isikwe in the second row. Kevin Gordon, Underhill and Victor Vito in the back row. And then my backs, Underhill, Nick White, Ryan Lamb, Jonathan Davis, Robbie Henshaw, Oliver Retiraka, Hogg and Woodburn.
You just got Underhill in your backs as well, have you?
No.
You know what I mean. How about saying something like, wow, James, that's a really good team.
There are a couple of players in there that I've got as well.
Yes.
So, well done, James. Yeah, I like the look of that. There's a few players in there. I like your second row combination, Nakarawa and Ezekwe.
Nakarawa is going to be one of the most picked players, I reckon, especially after that round one performance. I think most people are going to be sticking him in their second rows if he wasn't in there already.
I just don't think you've got the back three that I've got. I've got Raka, Piatau and Nadola.
How have you afforded that?
Oh.
Because he's been economical elsewhere, maybe.
It means you've got some lightweights up front then, have you?
Well,
props don't win you games. Not in this game.
It's spoken like a true outside centre, isn't it? Emma, it's been a lot of fun. Explain the rules and regulations, though, for everyone else who wants to have a go.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's on championscuprugby.com. Make sure you get your team in before round two starts. You can make a few tweaks to your team if you had already started for round one. And now we've heard Tom and James. Sides, mine's up next, and it might be as good, if not a little bit better.
Before we go, a reminder of what you can see across a wonderful weekend of European Champions Cup rugby from the 20th to the 22nd of October.
Friday.
Round two starts at 7:45 in Wales when Scarlets host a Bath side that impresses Ken Owens.
They got quality right across the pitch. I think they're developing. You know, they've always had the attacking game and they've really tightened up in their defence. And, you know, some big game players putting their hands up for them. You know, when they've had to front up against the big teams in the league, they've beaten them, Wasps and Saracens. They're going to be a massive challenge for us.
It's BT Sport 2 and BN Sports for the match at Parky Scarlets in Pool 5.
Saturday.
Glasgow Warriors face Leinster at 1 o'clock local time at the Scotstoun Stadium.
That's on Sky Sports Action or BN Sports in Pool 3.
Then Benetton Rugby hosts Toulon at 4:15 local time in Pool 5.
It's BT Sport and BN Sports for the match in Treviso.
Also at 4:15 local, ASM Clermont Auvergne hosts Northampton Saints in Pool 2 at the Stade Marcel Michelin.
We've done it before and we know what formidable, not just team, but I think it's a whole place that you're taking on. You know, you just arrive at the ground and you just feel that sense of noise and anticipation. It's a fantastic place to play. A lot of the players have played there, already talking about the anticipation of playing there, and hopefully that will get the team up for a good performance.
You can see Jim Mallander's Northampton Saints at Clermont on BN Sports or BT Sport 2.
Then it's the big clash at Thomond Park between Munster Rugby and Racing 92 in Pool 4.
That kicks off at 5:30 local time on Sky Sports Arena and BN Sports.
Same start time for Leicester Tigers versus Castres Olympique.
That Pool 4 match is on two Sky Sports channels, Main Event and Action, plus BN Sports.
Then the evening game sees the mighty Saracens play Steve Tandy's Ospreys.
It's really exciting to see and pit themselves. We've got a lot of young kids, we've got some experienced players as well, so I think this is how you learn, going up against the best. And I think it's not being daunted by it, it's just going there, embracing it and really trying to show what we can do.
Saracens against Ospreys is a 7:45 kickoff at Allianz Park in Pool 2 on BT Sport 2 and BN Sports.
Sunday.
At 2 o'clock French time, Montpellier host Exeter Chiefs and their director of rugby, Rob Baxter.
What we need to do is take some confidence from round one, then we can go over there and again we can try and get there and produce that kind of Exeter Chiefs away performance that we've started to become accustomed to doing, that puts the opposition under pressure and creates some pressure for them in front of their home crowd and takes away a little bit of the sting about what they want to achieve.
Montpellier against Exeter in Pool 3 is on BN Sports and Sky Sports Action.
Then it's the Stade Marcel de Flandre for La Rochelle against Ulster Rugby at 4:15 local time.
And you can see it on FR2, Sky Sports Action and BN Sports.
The final game of the weekend sees Wasps play Harlequins at the Ricoh Arena, with both looking for their first win in Pool 1.
It's a 5:30 kickoff local time on BT Sport 2 and BN Sports.
And that's your weekend sorted. 10 great matches in round 2 of the European Rugby Champions Cup. So, Tom May, what questions do you want answered by the matches in round 2?
I want to see if Saints can front up against Clermont away at the Stade Marcel Michelin. I want to see if La Rochelle can repeat last weekend's result as well, because I think for them against Ulster, that's a massive marker at home in their first Champions Cup game.
Emma?
I want to see if Saracens can surpass that round one performance. I also want to see who fronts up at the Ricoh Arena between Wasps and Quins in that defining game.
That's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't forget, round 2 of the European Rugby Champions Cup starts on Friday the 20th of October with 10 big matches across the weekend. Go to championscuprugby.com to play fantasy rugby. And for all the news and stats, don't forget you can find the Champions Cup highlights on the website and via the EPCR's social media channels. Keep sending your thoughts and predictions to @championscup and @ERChallengeCup on Twitter, and also on the European Rugby Champions Cup and Challenge Cup Facebook pages. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.